Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. On the table, in the light of a big lamp with a red shade, he spread a piece of parchment, rather like a map. Welcome back, everybody. We are almost to the end of the first chapter of The Hobbit, and I know it's been taking a while, but we're having a fun time going through all the little details, and maybe we'll get to the end this week. We're going to have to see where we go, but we are at the point of this chapter where they finally reveal the map. The plan seems to come together, at least in the mind of Bilbo, and we're going to take a look at all the little details that you might not have noticed when you read through this on your own. So let's get into it. So this is the point of the story where Gandalf reveals that he has a map from Thorin's grandfather, and he's been carrying this around for quite some time. He says, it is a plan of the mountain, and Thorin's initial response is, I don't think that's going to be much help, because I remember what the mountain looks like, and the lands around it, and where Mirkwood is, and basically, he's giving us an understanding as the reader that he's been there. He came from the mountain. He knows the world around it. And we get this cool little reference here where he says, and the withered heath where the great dragons bred. This is one of those little details that doesn't get pointed out very often. But we know from reading this that that was a location where the dragons who were left in the world since the end of the First Age actually existed, where they went to breed and have baby dragons. It doesn't come up anymore, and it's really not something of any significant note, but it's an interesting little piece of the lore that expands our understanding of something so cool like dragons. And then we get this little bit of dialogue from Balin. There's a dragon marked in red on the mountain, but it will be easy enough to find him without that if ever we arrive there, which to me feels like this is more dialogue to kind of fill in the gaps for us, the reader. If we didn't get it already from the song and the other things that they've been talking about so far, that the dragon is in the mountain, and Balin thinks it'll be easy enough to determine where he is. And then the conversation turns to the secret door. Gandalf points out that they haven't discussed yet the rune on the side of the mountain, which notes the location of a secret door, secret entrance, into the mountain. And then Thorin debates this and says, well, it may have been secret once, but how do we know that it's a secret any longer? And again, this is kind of that background detail. Smaug has lived in there long enough to basically find anything. But then we get another detail. But the doorway is 5 feet high and three may walk abreast, which means for a dwarf, it would fit a few dwarves at a time, and it would be significantly tall enough for them all to fit in it. But for a dragon, that's too small. In fact, he may have not noted it at all, amidst all the other complexities of this dwelling, and of course, the hoard of treasure, which he is much more focused on. And then we get this fun line about how he's probably much bigger now, not after devouring so many of the dwarves and men of Dale. He wouldn't be small enough after that. And this is kind of dark, maybe dark, subtly humorous, but it does give us some other insight. First of all, that the men of Dale stood with the dwarves, or at least were victims in the attack of the dragon in that region. We also seem to learn something else about dragons. The fact that they get bigger the more they eat, even later in life. Unless this was just kind of a joke. But if this is literally true, then that's also very interesting. Dragons may not have a size limit. And Caligon the Black would be an example of a very, very massive dragon that might confirm this idea. Bilbo finally speaks up and he says, "It seems a great big hole to me." And the actual text here says, "squeaked Bilbo, who had no experience of dragons and only of hobbit holes," because that size hole would be pretty big for a hobbit. And then we learn something else. He was getting excited and interested again, so that he forgot to keep his mouth shut. He loved maps. This is the Took side, again sneaking out. And we also get some other details about his hobbit hole and what he decorates it with. It says, "In his hall there hung a large one of the county round with all his favorite walks marked on it in red ink. He keeps maps in his own home." He's somebody who does enjoy a little bit of adventure, going on these walks, noting where he went on the maps. "How could such a large door be kept secret from everybody outside, apart from the dragon?" he asked. And then Gandalf, of course, responds in a lot of ways. And then they talk about exactly how you would hide a door like that. It's made to look exactly like the side of the mountain. That's what Gandalf says. And then Thorin confirms that. Yeah, that's quite right. Also, we find something else out. Gandalf not only had this map with him, but a key. He says, "I forgot to mention that the map went with a key, a small and curious key. Here it is." And he hands it to Thorin. And we're given a description here, which I think is also interesting. It has a long barrel, which means it's a fairly long key. The barrel is the main portion of the key. And it has intricate wards on it. And it's made of silver. I think this shows that this is a type of dwarven magic. The fact that it's made out of silver instead of something like iron means that that silver was chosen for its magical properties, not because it's going to be hard and hard to break, will last a long time. And it also has wards on it, much like we'll see in other locations where you have dwarven or elven wards or language or something written on something that's supposed to be magical. And immediately after this, we learn something else. Thorin takes it. He says, Gandalf says, "Keep it safe." And he says, "Indeed, I will." And he fastens it upon a fine chain that hung about his neck and under his jacket. This is similar to the way we see the ring held in the future by Frodo. The idea being that if you can attach it to a chain and wear it around your neck, you'll always know where it is. It's right there. It's harder to lose because it can't just fall out of a pocket. And then for the first time, we get some debate about how to get to the mountain, where to go. Thorin talks about going east and traveling to the Long Lake, but then what to do after that? He says, "After that, the trouble would begin." "A long time before that, if I know anything about the roads east," interrupts Gandalf, which gives us even more of an understanding, not only of the difficulty in the dwarves being able to concoct a plan, they have to somehow get a dragon out of their home, but also the dangers of the world. Gandalf is confirming right here, it's a little bit of foreshadowing that the party is going to come across some other dangers, but that the world itself, as they travel to the east, becomes more wild and dangerous. They mention going up the river running, going to the old ruins of the town of Dale. These are all things that, of course, we will learn more about later in the adventure, so they're kind of planting the seeds right here. And then we learn something very interesting about the river. The river runs right out of it, right out of the mountain, through the great cliff at the south of the mountain, and out of it comes the dragon too, far too often, unless he has changed his habits. And again, we're getting insight about the dwarves and their understanding not only of this location, but how the dragon actually works. As if they stuck around long enough to notice that the dragon would come in and out of the mountain from this location, and of course make it very difficult for them to try to take back their home. So they would need something to do that. So what do you use to take back your home from a dragon? Well, Gandalf has an answer. He says, "That would be no good, not without a mighty warrior, even a hero. I tried to find one, but warriors are busy fighting one another in distant lands, and in this neighborhood, heroes are scarce, or simply not to be found. Swords in these parts are mostly blunt, and axes are used for trees, and shields as cradles or dish covers, and dragons are comfortably far off. and therefore legendary. That is why I settled on burglary, especially when I remember the existence of a side door. And here is our little Bilbo Baggins, the burglar, the chosen and selected burglar. So now let's get on and make some plans. Gandalf sums up things for us right here. Basically, he answers some questions that we, as I guess you could say young readers of this, would probably have. Well, we've heard of dragon stories before. You need a hero. You need a warrior, somebody who can fight the dragon, like a gallant knight. But Gandalf answers that. He says, we don't have those around these parts, which makes me wonder which heroes would be capable of fighting a dragon that we would have in other parts. And my guess is very few people. So he decides to give us this description about what happens to swords and axes and shields, which is kind of humorous, but it also makes his point. And then confirms for us the reason why Bilbo is involved. He's still trying to sell the idea to Thorin. Thorin says, very well then, suppose this burglar expert gives us some ideas or suggestions. And then he turns with mock politeness to Bilbo. And notice, not only the mock politeness, but he also tacks on expert after burglar, as if to hit home the point that even if he is a burglar, is he really an expert? Bilbo's put on the spot, and he has to kind of speak up for the first time. And remember, he's still feeling determined to show that he can do it. Like, this tookish side of him is still kind of peeking out. He says, I mean about the gold and the dragons and all that, and how it got there, and who it belongs to, and so on and further. He's asking questions. He wants to know more about what's actually going on here. And really, it seems like he's buying time. Bless me, said Thorin. Haven't you got a map? And didn't you hear our song? And haven't you been talking about all this for hours? Like, wait a minute, what have we even been talking about? Have you been paying attention? And Bilbo defends himself and says, all the same, I should like it plain and clear, which I think is a way not only to help him understand, but also help us as the readers. Then he puts on his business manner, which I love this little detail here, usually reserved for people who tried to borrow money off him, which again confirms his ease of life and his station in the society. And then it says, and doing his best to appear wise and prudent and professional and live up to Gandalf's recommendation. He's still trying to prove himself. Although I should like to know about risks, out-of-pocket expenses, time required, and remuneration, that's a tricky word, and so forth. By which he meant, what am I going to get out of it, and am I going to come back alive? He's using fancy ways of talking like a business person in order to cover his butt, basically. And then we get Thorin's explanation of everything that happens. And I'll read a little bit at the beginning of this. This is actually a section that covers multiple paragraphs, and so we'll jump through this a little bit. But here, it starts off, oh, very well, said Thorin. Long ago in my grandfather Thror's time, our family was driven out of the far north and came back with all their wealth and their tools to this mountain on the map. So already they were ostracized from some other location. It had been discovered by my far ancestor, Thrain the Old, but now they mined and they tunneled and they made huger halls and greater workshops, and in addition, I believe they found a good deal of gold and a great many jewels too. Anyway, they grew immensely rich and famous, and my grandfather was king under the mountain again. And Thorin's story goes on to talk about their relationship with the men of Dale, and exactly how rich they were, including every dwarf, because of all the wealth in the mountain and all of the details about all the beautiful things that they made with their riches and the crafting that they did. And then there was discussion about the dragon. And we learn more about dragons. Dragons steal gold and jewels, and they guard their plunder as long as they live, which is practically forever, unless they are killed. This gives us more insight into how dragons work, but it also gives us some insight into how important this adventure is, because they can't just wait out the dragon. As far as they know, dragons can live forever. And not only can they live forever, but we also learn this. Indeed, they hardly know a good bit of work from a bad, though they usually have a good notion of the current market value. They love riches and finely crafted things, but in the way that extremely wealthy people do. Poorer people, when given the opportunity to have something precious, something beautiful and ornately crafted and of extreme amounts of wealth, value those things. They look at every little detail because they only get one or two of these things in their life. When it comes to the wealthy, however, they kind of lump it all together. They appreciate it, but not in the detail that others would, or even the craftsmen who made it would. Then we get some details about where the dragons used to live. They used to live up in the north in the old days, but they started migrating south and trying to find some other places. And Thorin speculates about this. Gold was probably getting scarce up there. With the dwarves all moving south to different locations, things had gone really bad in the north, and so the dragons were finding other hordes to plunder. And this one made a lot of sense. It was a mountain in the middle of nowhere, protected only by this group of dwarves. And if you recall, the details that we know about Morgoth and the way that he made the dragons and where he would put his fortresses, it was up in the north, in these cold, very difficult to reach regions of the map. And then we get details specifically about Smaug. But we're going to have to go into those after the midbreak because we have to go thank our patrons. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's Durafighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's Durafighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
All right, welcome to the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons. Welcome our new patrons, including Matt and Time for Tea, and shout out our VIP patrons, which I'll do in just a second. But if you would like to get access to bonus episodes every week and all sorts of other fun stuff, including t-shirts and stickers, and we'll have some new t-shirts and stickers up in just a month or so, head over to patreon.com/LOTRLorecast to check out everything you can get. And thank you to everybody who supports this show. We also have to shout out our VIP patrons, so let's get through the list. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn III, Alte Morton, Austin C., Azzle Razzle, Barney D., Bo, Black Squirrel, Brandy D., Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gimli A Break, Gemma D., Jesse P., Jezzer, Katie S., Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Nick K., Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Sam B., Seju, TJ T., and Tour Son of Hur. Thank you so much for all of your support. Wow, we got through it all. Also, if you want to help out the show in other ways, then please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Let me know what you like about the show and let other people know why they should tune in. And we don't have any new ones this week, but I'll read them out on a future episode of the show, which means if you decide to go leave a review there, I'll probably read it out next week. Thank you all for the support. Thank you all for being here. And if you want to help out in other ways, you can leave reviews on whatever other platform you listen to this on. You can share it with your friends and all that stuff. All right. We've got more Smaug to talk about, so this will be fun. Here we go. There was a most specially greedy, strong, and wicked worm called Smaug. One day he flew up into the air and came south. The first we heard of it was a noise like a hurricane coming from the north, and the pine trees and the mountain creaking and cracking in the wind. Pause there for a moment. the mountain creaking and cracking in the wind. Dwarves would understand what the earth sounds like when great pressures are moving things around, because they live deep in the earth. Smaug was powerful enough on his approach to make the mountain creak and crack. Some of the dwarves who happened to be outside, I was one, luckily, a fine adventurous lad in those days, always wandering about, and it saved my life that day. Well, from a good way off, we saw the dragon settle on our mountain in a spout of flame. Then he came down the slopes, and when he reached the woods, they all went up in fire. Smaug didn't just approach this mountain and check it out. He knew where he was going, and he came in force. He came to burn down anything that would stand in his way. By that time, all the bells were ringing in Dale, and the warriors were arming. The dwarves rushed out of their great gate, but there was the dragon waiting for them. None escaped that way. The river rushed up in steam, and a fog fell on Dale. And in the fog, the dragon came on them and destroyed most of their warriors. The usual unhappy story. It was only too common in those days. All right, let's pause there, because this is some dark business. All of a sudden, this children's story has taken a very, very dark turn. This dragon is murdering everybody. And not only was this a terrible situation, but it seems like things like this had happened fairly regularly. It was only too common in those days. He eventually gets in and, of course, takes over the mountain. We learn that he uses the gold as a bed. We learn that he would crawl out and go to Dale and carry away people. Now, he didn't just attack the city. He would pick on maidens. This feels like one of those antiquated beliefs about maidens being special for certain types of reasons and being targeted by terrible men. And I guess that includes dragons. Now, Smaug just wanted to eat them, but I guess that means they taste better? I don't know how that works. And then Thorn goes and explains exactly how he gets away. He was, of course, as he described just a minute ago, he was outside when the dragon attacked. And then he says, "The few of us that were well outside sat and wept in hiding and cursed Smaug." Remember, Smaug killed everybody. When he got inside the mountain, he routed the entire thing. The vast majority of the dwarves did not survive. Then he goes on and says, "And there we were unexpectedly joined by my father and my grandfather with singed beards. They looked very grim, but they said very little. When I asked how they got away, they told me to hold my tongue and said that one day in the proper time, I should know." This is a clear sign that they used the secret passage that Thorin is learning about now. "After that, we went away, and we've had to earn our livings as best we could up and down the lands, often enough sinking as low as blacksmith work or even coal mining." This is something that Tolkien would have been familiar with, especially after the events of World War I. There were many people who lost their homes in the war, many people who could not go back to where they came from, who had to take on other skills and rudimentary work, doing whatever they could in order to feed themselves and their families. This story would have resonated with a lot of people, including a lot of people who made their way to the United States to start new lives for them and their families. I'm the descendant on my mother's side of immigrants. I mean, technically, the vast majority of us are. Like, it's joked that my dad's side of the family came over on the Mayflower, that kind of thing. But on my mom's side of the family, my grandfather was born at the beginning of the century, and he left his home and traveled the world at a very young age and eventually made his way to the United States. My grandmother was already second generation American, but her parents had to go through something very similar. This is something a lot of people would have understood. So the conversation continues, and they discuss the secret side door, and the question becomes, how did Gandalf get a hold of this map and the key? What's going on with that? Gandalf responds, "I did not get a hold of it. I was given it. Your grandfather Thror was killed, you remember, in the mines of Moria by Azog the Goblin. This is the reference that they used in order to build out that entire character for the Hobbit movies and make him much bigger than he would have been otherwise. Curse his name, yes, said Thorin. And Thrain, your father, went away on the 21st of April, 100 years ago, last Thursday. This, of course, comes across to me as kind of humorous, but it's also very specific, and it seems like the kind of thing that Gandalf would remember, and has never been seen by you since. True, true, said Thorin. Well, your father gave me this to give to you, and if I have chosen my own time and way of handling it over, you can hardly blame me, considering the trouble I had to find you. Gandalf's defending himself, basically saying, like, listen, I know these are your things. I've always been planning to give them to you, and if I took some time to do it, please don't fault me on that. Here you go. And we get some more backstory. We find out that Thorin's father went off on an adventure and did not come back. He ends up a prisoner in the dungeons of the Necromancer, which we eventually, of course, learn is Sauron. And then we get the story about how Gandalf came across this information. He says, never you mind, I was finding things out as usual, and a nasty, dangerous business it was. Even I, Gandalf, only just escaped. I tried to save your father, but it was too late. Gandalf was already investigating what was going on with the Necromancer. He already had suspicions about who the Necromancer might actually be, and then realized that it was much more dangerous than he had anticipated. And at the mention of the Necromancer, Thorin responds, we have long ago paid the goblins of Moria, which I think means we have fought them in battle since then. But we must give a thought to the Necromancer. And then Gandalf responds, don't be absurd. He is an enemy far beyond the powers of all the dwarves put together. At this point, Gandalf knows that there is something much darker going on with who this Necromancer is, and is very, very firm in directing the dwarves away from him. He very clearly wants them to tackle the adventure with the mountain in order to get rid of a dragon, because that's something that they might be capable of doing. The Necromancer? That's completely off the list. He says, the dragon and the mountain are more than big enough tasks for you. Hear, hear, said Bilbo, who said it too loud, which again shows that the adventure side of him is kind of coming out. And this humor situation happens. Hear what? They all said, turning around towards him. We finally get a break in all of this dark talk with some more humor. Then we get this moment. Well, I should say that you ought to go east and have a look around. After all, there is the side door, and dragons must sleep sometimes, I suppose. If you sit on the doorstep long enough, I dare say you will think of something. This is Bilbo, again, defending himself as being somebody who can do what he's supposed to do and come up with ideas. And of course, this is a very generic idea. But it seems like it was good enough for the dwarves at this moment. They decide they're going to go to bed. There's the whole situation with them assuming he's going to make breakfast for them. And of course, he feels a little bit miffed about that. He even slips up and says, before you go, Thorin calls him out and says, before we go, I suppose you mean. Aren't you the burglar? And isn't sitting on the doorstep your job? Not to speak of getting inside the door? Making it very clear what Bilbo's role will be. And then we get another humorous moment. But I agree about food in bed. I like 6 eggs with my ham, which is a considerable amount of eggs, when starting on a journey. Fried, not poached, and mind you, don't break them. Which comes across a little demanding, but is, I think, meant to be a joke. Or at least just kind of a lighten-the-mood kind of moment. Everybody goes to their rooms to retire, and we get this little detail here about how Bilbo felt at the end of the night. The tookishness was wearing off, and he was not now quite so sure that he was going on any journey in the morning. As he lay in bed, he could hear Thorin still humming to himself in the best bedroom next to him. And if you're one of the patrons, we discussed the different versions of the map of his home, which, think about that. And he hears Thorin humming, far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old. We must away ere the break of day. to find our long forgotten gold. Bilbo went to sleep with that in his ears, and it gave him very uncomfortable dreams. It was long after the break of day when he woke up. It's almost like Thorin's song was an earworm, something that crawls into his brain and he can't let go of, something that holds on to him, even though it's scary. But he feels, I don't know, it doesn't say it here, but it almost feels like this is something he has to do. At least that's my feeling about this at this point in the story. The Tookish side of Bilbo emerged way more often and more strongly than you would have assumed at the beginning of this chapter. And it sets up what happens next in chapter 2. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being here. I'd love any of your thoughts on this if you want to comment on this episode. And have a wonderful week. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money.